Chapter 15. A Place to Begin. Rand woke on the floor of a hallway. He sat up, listening to the distant sound of water. The stream outside the manor house? No, that was wrong. The walls and floor here were stone, not wood. No candles or lamps hung from the stonework, and yet there was light, ambient in the air. He stood, then straightened his red coat, feeling strangely unafraid. He recognized this place from somewhere, distant in his memory. How had he come here? The recent past was clouded and seemed to slip from him like fading trails of mist. No, he thought firmly. His memories obeyed, snapping back into place before the strength of his determination. He had been in the Domani Manor House, awaiting a report from Rourke about the capture of the first few members of the Merchant Council. Min had been reading Each Castle, a biography, in the deep green chair of the room they shared. Rand had been exhausted, as he often was lately. He'd gone to lie down. He was asleep then. Was this the world of dreams? Though he had visited it on occasion, he knew very few specifics. Egwene and the Aiel Dreamwalkers spoke of it only guardedly. This place felt different from the dream world, and oddly familiar. He looked down the hallway. It was so long that it vanished into shadows, walls broken by doors at intervals, the wood dry and cracked. Yes, he thought, seizing at a memory. I have been here before, but not in a long time. He chose one of the doors at random. He knew that it wouldn't matter which one he picked, and pushed it open. There was a room beyond of modest size. The far side was a series of gray stone arches. Beyond them, a little courtyard and a sky of burning red clouds. The clouds grew and sprang from one another like bubbles in boiling water. They were the clouds of an impending storm, unnatural though they were. He looked more closely and saw that each new cloud formed the shape of a tormented face, the mouth open in a silent scream. The cloud could swell, expanding upon itself, face distorting, jaw working, cheeks twisting, eyes bulging. Then it would split, other faces swelling out of its surface, yelling and seething. It was transfixing and horrifying at the same time. There was no ground beyond the courtyard, just that terrible sky. Rand did not want to look toward the left side of the room. The fireplace was there. The stones that formed floor, hearth, and columns were warped, as if they had been melted by an extreme heat. At the edges of his vision, they seemed to shift and change. The angles and proportions of the room were wrong, just as they had been when he'd come here long ago. Something was different this time, however. Something about the colors. Many of the stones were black, as if they'd been burned, and cracks laced them. Distant red light glowed from within, as if they had cores of molten lava. There had once been a table here, hadn't there? Polished and of fine wood, its ordinary lines a discomforting contrast to the distorted angles of the stones. The table was gone. But two chairs sat before the fireplace, high-backed and facing the flames, obscuring whomever might be sitting in them. Rand forced himself to walk forward, his boots clicking on stones that burned. He felt no heat, either from them or the fire. His breath caught and his heart pounded as he approached those chairs. He feared what he would find. He rounded them. A man sat in the chair on the left. Tall and youthful, he had a square face and ancient blue eyes that reflected the hearth fire, turning his irises almost purple. The other chair was empty. Rand walked to it and sat down, calming his heart and watching the dancing flames. He had seen this man before in visions, not unlike the ones that appeared when he thought of Matt or Perrin. The colors did not appear on this thought of his friends. That was odd, but somehow not unexpected. The visions he'd seen of the man in the other chair were different from the ones involving Perrin and Matt. They were more visceral somehow, more real. At times, during those visions, Rand had felt almost as if he could reach out and touch this man. He'd been afraid of what would happen if he did. He had met the man only once, at Shadarlogoth. The stranger had saved Rand's life, and Rand had often wondered who he had been. Now in this place, Rand finally knew.
"You are dead," Rand whispered. "I killed you."
The man didn't look from the fire as he laughed. It was a rough, low-throated laugh that held little true mirth. Once Rand had known this man only as Beelzemon, a name for the Dark One, and had foolishly thought that in killing him, he had defeated the Shadow for good.
"I watched you die," Rand said. "I stabbed you through the chest with Kalendor, Isha."
"That is not my name,"
the man interrupted, still watching the flames.
"I am known as Moradin now."
"The name is irrelevant," Rand said angrily. "You are dead, and this is just a dream."
"Just a dream," Moradin said, chuckling. "Yes."
The man was clad in a black coat and trousers, the darkness relieved only by red embroidery on the sleeves. Moradin finally looked at him. Flames from the fire cast bright red and orange light across his angular face and unblinking eyes.
"Why do you always whine that way? Just a dream. Do you not know that many dreams are more truthful than the waking world?"
"You are dead," Rand repeated stubbornly.
"So are you. I watched you die, you know. Lashing out in a tempest, creating an entire mountain to mark your cairn. So arrogant."
Luce Theron had, upon discovering that he'd killed all that he loved, drawn upon the One Power and destroyed himself, creating Dragonmount in the process. Mention of this event always brought on howls of grief and anger in Rand's mind. But this time there was silence. Moradin turned back to watch the heatless flames. To the side, in the stones of the fireplace, Rand saw movement, flickering bits of shadow, just barely visible through the cracks in the stones. The red-hot heat shone behind, like rock turned molten, and these shadows moved, frantic. Just faintly, Rand could hear scratching. Rats, he realized. There were rats behind the stones, being consumed by the terrible heat trapped on the other side. Their claws scratched, pushing through the cracks as they tried to escape their burning. Some of those tiny hands seemed almost human. "Just a dream," Rand told himself forcefully. "Just a dream." But he knew the truth of what Moradin had said. Rand's enemy still lived. Light. How many of the others had returned as well? Anger made him grip the armrest of the chair. Perhaps he should have been terrified, but he had stopped running from this creature and his master long ago. Rand had no room left for fear. In fact, it should be Moradin who feared. For the last time they had met, Rand had killed him. "How?" Rand demanded.
"Long ago, I promised you that the Great Lord could restore your lost love. Do you not think that he can easily recover one who serves him?"
Another name for the Dark One was Lord of the Grave. Yes, it was true, even if Rand wished he could deny it. Why should he be surprised to see his enemies return when the Dark One could restore the dead to life?
"We are all reborn," Moradin continued, "spun back into the pattern time and time again. Death is no barrier to my master, save for those who have known Balefire. They are beyond his grasp. It is a wonder we can remember them."
Some of the others really were dead. Balefire was the key. But how had Moradin gotten into Rand's dreams? Rand set wards each night. He glanced at Moradin, noticing something odd about the man's eyes. Small black flecks floated about in the whites,
crossing back and forth like bits of ash blown in a leisurely wind.
The Great Lord can grant you sanity, you know, Moradin said.
Your last gift of sanity brought me no comfort, Rand said, surprising himself with the words. That had been Luz Theron's memory, not his own. Yet Luz Theron was gone from his mind. Oddly, Rand felt more stable somehow, here in this place, where all else appeared fluid. The pieces of him fit together better. Not perfectly, of course, but better than they had in recent memory. Moradin snorted softly, but said nothing. Rand turned back to the flames, watching them twist and flicker. They formed shapes, like the clouds, but these were headless bodies, skeletal, backs arching in pain, writhing for a moment in fire, spasming before flashing into nothing. Rand watched that fire for a time, thinking. One might have thought that they were two old friends enjoying the warmth of a winter hearth, except that the flames gave no heat, and Rand would someday kill this man again, or die at his hands. Moradin tapped his fingers on the chair.
Why have you come here?
Come here? Rand thought with shock. Hadn't Moradin brought him?
I feel so tired, Moradin continued, closing his eyes. Is that you, or is it me? I could throttle Semirag for what she did.
Rand frowned. Was Moradin mad? Ishamael had certainly seemed crazy at the end.
It is not time for us to fight, Moradin said, waving a hand at Rand. Go. Leave me in peace. I do not know what would happen to us if we killed one another. The Great Lord will have you soon enough. His victory is assured.
He has failed before and will fail again, Rand said. I will defeat him. Moradin laughed again, the same heartless laugh as before.
Perhaps you will, he said. But do you think that matters? Consider it. The wheel turns time and time again. Over and over the ages turn and men fight the Great Lord. But someday he will win, and when he does, the wheel will stop. That is why his victory is assured. I think it will be this age, but if not, then in another. When you are victorious, it only leads to another battle. When he is victorious, all things will end. Can you not see that there is no hope for you?
Is that what made you turn to his side? Rand asked. You were always so full of thoughts, Elon. Your logic destroyed you, didn't it?
There is no path to victory, Moradin said. The only path is to follow the Great Lord and rule for a time before all things end. The others are fools. They look for grand rewards in the eternities. But there will be no eternities. Only the now. The last days.
He laughed again, and this time there was joy in it. True pleasure. Rand stood. Moradin eyed him warily, but did not get up.
There is a way to win, Moradin, Rand said. I mean to kill him. Slay the Dark One. Let the wheel turn without his constant taint.
Moradin gave no reaction. He was still staring at the flames.
We are connected, Moradin finally said. That is how you came here, I suspect. Though I do not understand our bond myself. I doubt you can understand the magnitude of the stupidity in your statement.
Rand felt a flash of anger, but fought it down. He would not be goaded.
We shall see.
He reached for the one power. It was distant, far away. Rand seized it and felt himself yanked away as if on a line of Saiyadin. The room vanished, and so did the one power, as Rand entered a deep blackness.
Rand finally stopped thrashing in his sleep, and Min held her breath, hoping that he wouldn't start again. She sat, legs tucked underneath her, wrapped in a blanket as she read in her chair at the corner of the room. A small lamp flickered and danced on the short table beside her, illuminating her stack of musty books. Falling Shale, Marks and Remarks, Monuments Past, Histories, most of them. Rand sighed softly but did not move. Min released her breath and settled back into her chair, finger marking her place in a copy of Peloteos's Ponderings. With the shutters closed for the night, she could still hear the wind sough in the pines. The room smelled faintly of smoke from the strange fire. Avienda's quick thinking had made a potential disaster into a mere inconvenience. Not that she was being rewarded for it. The wise ones continued to work her as hard as a merchant's last mule. Min hadn't been able to get close enough to her to have a conversation, despite the fact that they'd been in the camp together for some time now. She didn't know how to think of the other woman. They had become a little more comfortable with one another that evening, sharing usquai. But one day did not friends make, and she was definitely uncomfortable about sharing. Min glanced again at Rand, lying on his back, eyes closed, breath coming evenly now. His left arm lay across his blankets, the stump exposed. She didn't know how he managed to sleep with those wounds in his side. As soon as she thought of them, she could feel the pain. It was all part of the rolled-up ball of Rand's emotions in the back of her mind. She had learned to ignore the pain. She'd had to. For him, it would be much, much stronger. How he could stand it, she didn't know. She wasn't Aes Sedai, thank the light, but somehow she had bonded him. It was amazing. She could tell where he was, tell if he was distraught. She could mostly keep his emotions from overwhelming her, except when they were passionate. But what woman didn't want to be overwhelmed during those moments? It was a particularly exhilarating experience with the bond, which let her feel both her own desire and the raging tempest of fire that was Rand's desire for her. The thought made her blush, and she pulled open Ponderings to distract herself. Rand needed his sleep, and she was going to let him have it. Besides, she needed to study, although she was confronted by conclusions that she didn't like. These books had belonged to Herod Fell, the kindly old scholar who had joined Rand's school in Cairion. Min smiled, remembering Fell's distracted way of talking and his confused, yet somehow brilliant, discoveries. Herod Fell was dead now, murdered, torn apart by Shadow Spawn. He'd discovered something in these books, something he'd intended to tell Rand, something about the last battle and the seals on the Dark One's prison. Fell had been killed just before he could pass on the information. Perhaps it was coincidence, perhaps the books had nothing to do with his death, but perhaps they did. Min was determined to find the answers, for Rand and for Herod himself. She put down Ponderings and picked up Thoughts Among the Ruins, a work from over 1,000 years ago. She'd marked a place with a small slip of paper, the very same now-worn note that Herod had sent to Rand shortly before the murder. Min turned it over in her fingers, reading it again. Belief and order give strength. Have to clear rubble before you can build. Will explain when see you next. Do not bring girl. Too pretty. She figured, from reading among his books, that she could trace his thoughts. Rand had wanted information on how to seal the Dark One's prison. Could Fell have discovered what she thought he had? She shook her head. What was she doing trying to solve a scholarly mystery? But who else was there? One of the brown Aja might be better suited, but could they be trusted? Even those who had made their oaths to him might decide that it was in Rand's best interests to keep secrets from him. Rand himself was far too busy, and he was too impatient for books lately anyway. That left Min. She was beginning to piece together some of what he would have to do, but there was more, so much more, that was still unknown. She felt she was getting close, but it worried her to reveal what she'd discovered to Rand. How would he respond? She sighed, scanning the book. She'd never thought that she, of all people, would become a fool for some man. Yet here she was, following him wherever he went, putting his needs before her own. That didn't mean she was his pet, regardless what some of the people in camp said. She followed Rand because she loved him, and she could feel, literally, that he returned her love. Despite the harshness that was invading him bit by bit, despite the anger and the bleakness of his life, he loved her, and so she did what she could to help him. If she could help solve this one puzzle, the puzzle of sealing the Dark One's prison, she could achieve something not just for Rand, but for the world itself. What did it matter if soldiers in the camp didn't know what her value was? It was probably better if everyone assumed her to be dismissible. Any assassin who came to kill Rand should think that he could ignore Min. The would-be killer would soon discover the knives hidden in Min's sleeves. She wasn't as good with them as Tom Marilyn was, but she knew more than enough to kill. Rand turned in his sleep, but settled down again. She loved him. She hadn't chosen to do so, but her heart, or the pattern, or the creator, or whatever was in charge of these things, had made the decision for her, and now she wouldn't change her feelings if she could. If it meant danger, if it meant suffering the looks of men in the camp, if it meant sharing him with others. Rand stirred again. This time he groaned and opened his eyes, sitting up. He raised his hand to his head, somehow managing to look more weary now than he had when he'd gone to sleep. He wore only his small clothes, and his chest was bare. He sat like that for a long moment, then stood up, walking to the shuttered window. Min pushed her book closed. "And what do you think you're doing, sheepherder? You barely slept for a couple of hours." He opened the shutters and the window, exposing the dark night beyond. A stray curl of wind made her lamp flame shiver. "Rand?" Min asked. She could barely hear his voice when he replied.
"He's inside my head. He was gone during the dream, but he's back now."
She resisted sinking down in her chair, light, but she hated hearing about Rand's madness. She'd hoped that when he healed Sidene, he would be free of the taint's insanities. "He?" she asked, forcing her voice to be steady. "The voice of Luz Theron?" He turned, clouded night sky outside the window framing his face, the lamp's uneven illumination leaving his features mostly in shadows. "Rand," she said, setting her book aside and joining him beside the window. "You have to talk to someone. You can't keep it all inside."
"I have to be strong."
She tugged on his arm, turning him toward her. "Keeping me away means you're strong." "I'm not." "Yes, you are. There are things going on in there, behind those Aiel eyes of yours. Rand, do you think I will stop loving you because of what you hear?"
"You'll be frightened."
"Oh," she said, folding her arms. "So I'm a fragile flower, am I?" He opened his mouth, struggling for words, in the way he once had, back when he'd been nothing more than a sheep herder on an adventure.
"Min, I know you're strong. You know I do."
"Then trust me to be strong enough to bear what is inside you," she said. "We can't just pretend nothing has happened." She forced herself onward. "The taint left marks on you. I know it did. But if you can't share it with me, who can you share it with?" He ran his hand through his hair, then turned away, beginning to pace.
"Burn it all, Min. If my enemies discover my weaknesses, they will exploit them. I feel blind. I'm running in the dark on an unfamiliar path. I don't know if there are breaks in the road or if the whole cursed thing ends in a cliff."
She laid a hand on his arm as he passed, stopping him. "Tell me."
"You'll think I'm mad."
She snorted. "I already think you're a wool-headed fool. Can it be much worse than that?" He regarded her, and some of the tension left his face. He sat down on the edge of the bed, sighing softly. But it was progress.
"Semirag was right," Rand said. "I hear things, a voice. the voice of Luz Theron, the dragon. He speaks to me and responds to the world around me. Sometimes he tries to seize Sidene from me, and sometimes he succeeds. He's wild, men. Insane. But the things he can do with the One Power are amazing. He stared off into the distance. Min shivered. Light. He let the voice in his head wield the One Power? What did that mean? That he let the mad part of his brain take control? He shook his head. Semirog claims that this is just insanity, tricks of my mind. But Luz Theron knows things. Things that I don't. Things about history, about the One Power. You had a viewing of me that showed two people merging into one. That means that Luz Theron and I are distinct. Two people, men. He's real. She walked over and sat next to him. Rand, he's you, or you're him, spun out into the pattern again. Those memories and things you can do, they're remnants from who you were before. No, Rand said. Min, he's insane and I'm not. Besides, he failed. I won't. I won't do it, Min. I won't hurt those I love as he did. And when I defeat the Dark One, I won't leave him able to return a short time later and terrorize us again. 3,000 years, a short time later? She put her arms around him. Does it matter? She asked. If there is another person, or if those are just memories from before, the information is useful. Yes, Rand said, seeming distant again. But I'm afraid to use the One Power. When I do, I risk letting him take control. He can't be trusted. He didn't mean to kill her, but that doesn't change the fact that he did. Light. Ilyena. Was this how it happened to all of them? Each one assuming that they were really sane, and that it was the other person inside of them who did horrible things? It's done now, Rand, she said, holding him close. Whatever this voice is, it won't grow any worse. Sidene is cleansed. Rand didn't respond, but he did relax. She closed her eyes, enjoying the feeling of his warmth beside her, particularly since he'd left the window open. Ishamael lives, Rand said. She snapped her eyes open. What? Just when she was beginning to feel comfortable. I visited him in the world of dreams, Rand said. And before you ask, no, it wasn't just a nightmare and it wasn't madness. It was real, and I can't explain how I know. You will just have to trust me. Ishamael, she whispered. You killed him. Yes, Rand said. In the Stone of Tyr. He has returned, bearing a new face and a new name, but it is him. We should have realized it would happen. The Dark One won't abandon such useful tools without a fight. He can reach beyond the grave.
Then how can we win? If everyone we kill just comes back again,
Balefire, Rand said. It will kill them for good.
Cadswain said,
I don't care what Cadswain said, he snarled. She is my advisor, and she gives advice, only advice. I am the Dragon Reborn, and I will decide how we fight.
He stopped, taking a deep breath.
Anyway, it doesn't matter if the Forsaken return. It doesn't matter who or what the Dark One sends at us. In the end, I will destroy him, if possible. If not, then I will at least seal him away so tightly that the world can forget him.
He glanced down at her.
For that, I need the voice, Min. Luz Theron knows things, or I know things. Whichever it is, the knowledge is there. In a way, the Dark One's own taint will destroy him, for it is what gave me access to Luz Theron.
Min glanced at her books. Herod's little slip of paper still peeked from the depths of thoughts among the ruins. Rand, she said. You have to destroy the seals to the Dark One's prison. He looked at her, frowning. I'm sure of it, she said. I've been reading Herod's books all this time, and I believe that's what he meant by clearing away the rubble. In order to rebuild the Dark One's prison, you will first need to open it, clear away the patch made on the boar. She had expected him to be incredulous. Shockingly, he just nodded.
Yes, he said. Yes, that sounds right. I doubt that many will wish to hear it. If those seals are broken, there is no way to tell what will happen. If I fail to contain him...
The prophecies didn't say Rand would win. Only that he would fight. Min shivered again, blasted window, but met Rand's gaze. You'll win. You'll defeat him.
He sighed. Faith in a madman, Min.
Faith in you, sheepherder.
Suddenly viewings spun around his head. She ignored them most of the time unless they were new, but now she picked them out.
Fireflies consumed in darkness. Three women before a pyre. Flashes of light, darkness, shadow. Signs of death, crowns, injuries, pain, and hope. A tempest around Randall Thor, stronger than any physical storm.
We still don't know what to do, he said. The seals are brittle enough that I could break them in my hands, but what then? How do I stop him? Does it say anything of that in your books?
It's hard to tell, she admitted. The clues, if that's what they are vague. I will keep looking. I promise. I'll find answers for you.
He nodded, and she was surprised to feel his trust through the bond.
That was a frighteningly rare emotion from him recently, but he did seem softer than he had during previous days. Still stone, but perhaps with some few cracks, willing to let her inside. It was a beginning.
She tightened her arms around him and closed her eyes again. A place to begin, but with so little time left, it would have to do.
Carefully shielding her burning candle, Avienda lit the pole-mounted lantern. It flickered a light, illuminating the green around her. Slumbering soldiers snored in rows of tents. The evening was cold, the air crisp, and branches rattled in the distance. A lonely owl hooted, and Avienda was exhausted. She'd crossed the grounds 50 times, lighting the lantern, blowing it out, then jogging back across the green and lighting her candle at the manor before walking carefully, shielding the flame, to light the lantern again. Another month of these punishments and she'd probably go as mad as a wetlander. The wise ones would wake one morning and find her going for a swim, or carrying a half-full water-skin, or even riding a horse for pleasure. She sighed, too exhausted to think any further, and turned toward the Aiel section of camp to finally sleep. Someone was standing behind her. She started, hand going to her dagger, but relaxed as she recognized Amis. Of all the wise ones, only she, a former maiden, could have sneaked up on Avienda. The wise one stood with hands clasped before her, brown shawl and skirt flapping slightly in the wind. Avienda's skin prickled at the particularly chilly gust. Amis's silver hair seemed almost ghostly in the evening light. A pine needle passing on the breeze had gotten lodged in it.
You approach your punishments with such dedication, child, Amis said.
Avienda looked down. Pointing out her activities was to shame her. Was she running out of time? Had the wise ones finally decided to give up on her?
Please, wise one, I only do as duty demands.
Yes, you do, Amis said.
She reached up, running her hand through her hair, and found the pine needle, then let it drop to the dead grass.
And also, you do not. Sometimes, Avienda, we are so concerned with the things we have done that we do not stop to consider the things we have not.
Avienda was glad for the darkness, which hid her shameful blush. In the distance, a soldier rang the evening bell to chime the hour, the soft metal ringing with 11 melancholy peals. How did she respond to Amis's comments? There didn't seem to be any proper response. Avienda was saved by a flash of light just beyond the camp. It was faint, but in the darkness the flicker was easy to notice.
What?
The wise one asked, noticing Avienda's gaze and turning to follow it.
Light. Avienda said.
From the traveling grounds.
Amis frowned, then the two of them moved toward the grounds. Soon they encountered Dahmer Flynn, Davram Bashir,
a small guard of Saldaeans and Aiel walking into the camp. What did one think of a creature such as Flynn? The taint had been cleansed, but this man, and many of the others, had come asking to learn before that had happened. Avienda herself would have sooner embraced Sight Blinder himself as done that, but they had proven to be powerful weapons. Amys and Avienda moved to the side as the small party hurried toward the manor house, lit only by the distant flickering torches and the cloud-covered sky above. Though most of the force sent to meet the Seanchan had been made up of Bashir's soldiers, there were several maidens in the group. Amys locked eyes with one of them, an older woman named Corana. She hung back, and though it was difficult to tell in the darkness, she looked concerned, perhaps angry. "What news?" Amys asked. "The invaders, these Seanchan," Corana nearly spat the word. "They have agreed to another meeting with the Karakarn." Amys nodded. Corana, however, sniffed audibly, short hair ruffling in the chill breeze. "Speak," Amys said. "The Karakarn sues too hard for peace," Corana replied. "These Seanchan have given him reason to declare a blood feud, but he simpers and panders to them. I feel like a trained dog sent to lick the feet of a stranger." Amys glanced at Avienda. "What do you say to this, Avienda?" "My heart agrees with her words, wise one. But while the Karakarn is a fool in some things, he is not being one now. My mind agrees with him, and in this case it is the mind I would follow." "How can you say that?" Corana snapped. She emphasized the "you," as if to imply that Avienda, recently a maiden, should understand. "Which is more important, Corana?" Avienda replied, raising her chin. "The argument you have with another maiden, or the feud your clan has with its enemy?" "The clan comes first, of course. But what does that matter?" "The Seanchan deserve to be fought," Avienda said, "and you are right that it pains to ask them for peace. But you forget that we have a greater enemy. Sightblinder himself has a feud with all men, and our duty is larger than feuds between nations." Amys nodded. "There will be time enough to show the Seanchan the weight of our spears at another date." Corana shook her head. "Wise one, you sound like a wetlander. What care have we for their prophecies and stories? Randalthor's duty as Karakarn is much greater than his duty to the wetlanders. He must lead us to glory." Amys stared harshly at the blonde maiden. "You speak like a Shido." Corana locked her stare for a moment, then wilted, turning away. "Pardon, wise one," she finally said. "I have to. But you should know that the Seanchan had Aiel in their camps." "What?" Avienda asked. "They were leashed," Corana said, "like their tame Aes Sedai. They were being shown off like prizes for our arrival, I suspect. I recognized many Shido among them." Amys hissed softly. Shido or not, Aiel being held as Damani was a grave insult, and the Seanchan were flaunting their captives. She gripped her dagger. "What do you say now?" Amys glanced at Avienda. Avienda gritted her teeth. "The same, wise one, though I'd almost rather cut out my tongue than admit it." Amys nodded, looking back at Corana. "Do not think that we will ignore this insult, Corana. Vengeance will come. Once this war is done, the Seanchan will feel the storm of our arrows and the tips of our spears, but not until after. Go tell the two clan chiefs what you have told me." Corana nodded. She would meet her To later, in private, with Amys, and left. Dahmer Flynn and the others had already reached the manor house. Would they wake Rand? He was sleeping now, though Avienda had been forced to mute her bond in the middle of her night's punishment, lest she endure sensations that she'd rather have avoided. At least, she'd rather have avoided them secondhand. "There will be dangerous words of this among the spears," Amys said thoughtfully. "There will be calls to attack,
demands that the Karakarn give up his attempts to make peace. Will they stay with him when he refuses? Avienda asked. Of course they will, Amis said. They're Aiel. She glanced at Avienda. We haven't much time, child. Perhaps it is time to stop coddling you. I will think up better punishments for you starting tomorrow. Coddling me? Avienda watched Amis stalk away. They couldn't possibly come up with anything more useless or demeaning. But she'd learned long ago not to underestimate Amis. With a sigh, Avienda broke into a trot, heading back toward her tent.